So, good day everyone. We're here for another episode of the DVD show. So, for today, we have a current Magnolia Hotshot Pambansang Manok shooting guard, and he was also playing in the Adamson Soaring Falcons before playing in the PBA. And yeah, he's one of the best shooters in the country. So, I'll now welcome here on the DVD show, Jerick Ahanmisi. Thank you for joining me here on the pod.
What's up, everybody? It's nice to be here, and thank you for inviting me, bro. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Yeah, yeah. To start things off, I want to ask, how have you been doing? I mean, yeah, we are recording now on a Saturday, and you have a game tomorrow, opening game in the Governor's Cup. So I know you guys are preparing well. So how's life been like for you on the court and off the court?
On the court, it's been fun. I mean, I've been playing with a lot of veteran players. I've been playing with a lot of experienced players, and I've been just been able to learn a lot from them, and basketball-wise and just life in general. So, I mean, it's been fun. It's been a challenging journey, as always, just like life is. And I'm excited to see, you know, what life has in store for me in basketball-wise. But life-wise, me and my – wait. I don't know why I should say this. Do you think – is it okay? Okay. I say that you're okay. So in life right now, yeah. Me and my girlfriend, we're going on about like 7 years now, and six years, and we're currently about to have a baby.
Congrats!
Thank you. And she's currently 7 months, so baby's about to come out in I think March. End of March, so we're really excited for that, and I'm so ready. I can't wait for a baby to come out.
Oh, is your child gonna be a guy or a girl?
It's gonna be a boy.
Oh, okay. So how are you preparing for that? I mean, it's a whole different life. I mean,
I know
other athletes, how they like mentor their child or their baby, how they enjoy it, how it gives them a break. But you, how are you getting ready for that?
Honestly, I don't think you can really, you know, get ready to have a child. In other cases, just like, you know, having the clothes ready, having like the food ready, having, you know, your place ready and clean before the baby comes. But I don't think you can, as a father now, I don't think I can really say I'm like fully prepared to have a baby, but I know that when the baby is out here, I'm going to do my best to take care of it, to guide it in its life, and, you know, just try to give it the best life that I can possibly give.
Yeah, that's really great that you're going to be a great dad for sure. And I hope that, you know, what if your son becomes a basketball player also in the future?
If he becomes a basketball player, that would be easier for me. Because I'll be able to teach him whatever position he wants to play, whether that be point guard, shooting guard, if he's a big man, you know. But yeah, I think that'll be easier for me and easier on my girlfriend, because you know, she wouldn't have to worry about, you know, finding somebody else to teach him how to play basketball. You know, his father's here, and I'll be able to teach him the right ways.
Yeah. Are you ready not to get enough sleep every night?
I don't know. I feel like I'm pretty ready for it. I know that it's gonna be kind of tough in the first like couple maybe weeks or months having the baby, but I think that's expected. If you're gonna have a baby, you should always be ready to not be able to sleep at night. Sometimes you got to be ready to maybe pull an all-nighter or wake up in the middle of the night just to be able to take care of the baby. So you know, I'm ready for anything.
Talking about your family now with your girlfriend, you're gonna have a child soon. How did you spend the holidays? I mean, you guys unfortunately lost to Ginebra in the semis in the Commissioner's Cup, but you guys had a break, since there was a break between Christmas and New Year's in the finals, so that extended your break too. I mean, they started Jan 22, I believe, in the conference, and your first game is tomorrow. So how did you spend it and like prepare for this conference since you want to, you know, get the better position?
Honestly, we didn't do much this break because, you know, we were just kind of getting ready for the baby in March. We were just kind of shopping around to see where we could like buy certain items and products for the baby. And that's kind of how we spent most of our time. We spent most of it together too. Mm-hmm. We got some quality bonding time and that's it. I mean, we just spent most of the time together, and we got to see a couple of friends on the way too. And it was just a good break. It was a good relaxing break, refresher. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's fun. But yeah, moving on to basketball now, and for you guys playing now in the Governor's Cup, what are you most excited about? Like, what have you seen from the teams that have already played, and what are you guys looking at to continue to improve your standing and possibly compete with the likes of Ginebra, San Miguel, and all those teams?
I think one of the things that we could possibly grow on as a team and improve on as a team is just being a little bit smarter during like big games against like Ginebra or San Miguel, especially down the stretch of games. You know, that all comes with experience. Obviously, it all comes with, you know, having to make mistakes during the games in order for you to learn from them. So I think, yeah, that's one of the things that we might need to improve on a little bit. But I know that knowing our guys and knowing that we will always want to win, we're going to be learning from that, and we'll move on and move forward.
Mm-hmm. How about with your import and or some of the other imports that you've seen? How has been the adjustment like? How's he playing? How's he meshing with the system?
He's meshing pretty well. I mean, usually all the imports that we get are, you know, they fit in really well with our team. Mm-hmm. And I think our import is going to be ready. Our import is really good. He's an all-around player. He can play multiple positions on the court. So, you know, I'm pretty sure Coach will utilize him in, you know, the strengths that he can show during the game.
Yeah. What's his name again?
His name is Eric McCree.
Oh, okay. He's a new import here in the country. I haven't heard his name here even before, like as a replacement importer. Something like that. But looking at Magnolia now, and you seeing Ginebra in Bay Area last conference, and you seeing that you guys can play with them, what do you think, what do you think you guys could say? Like you said, you need repetitions and being more used to playing in the big games. So do you think you just need to keep experiencing those games, or is it more of end game execution defensively or offensively? What are your opinion? What's your opinion on that?
Yeah, like you said, I mean, experience is always the best teacher, right? So, I mean, even if we play these same teams over and over and over again, every game is always different and always throws you something that you might not see in past couple games or in past games that you've played in. So, yeah, I mean, we just got to keep playing in games. We have to keep learning from them. And the more that we play in games against bigger teams and against teams that, you know, we could go up against or that are better than us or, you know, same level, same players as us, you know, that's the way we're going to learn. And that's the way we're going to improve. And hopefully we'll get over that semis hump this conference.
Yeah. Speaking of going up against these opponents, and you saw that you guys played against Bay Area in the last conference. What's your opinion on having guest teams and the PBA? Because I don't know, the last guest team that we had was a pretty long time ago. It's a club, and they almost won the championship. They were one game away. So, but yeah, what's your sentiments on having a guest team, maybe like annually, maybe once a year, or maybe even adding like one or two or three guest teams? Like, do you think it's beneficial to Philippine brand of basketball?
Yeah, I think it's beneficial because I feel like it's more of like a refresher to Philippine basketball, so that people aren't just seeing how Filipinos play. They can kind of see how other countries play, maybe from China or from Japan or, you know, wherever they pick their teams from. And as you can see, like, there's players even going across to Japan or to, like, different countries just to play basketball. And like I said, like, those types of experiences, you know, are once in a lifetime. You know, we don't know when the next time another guest team from Hong Kong or China or wherever is going to come into the PBA and play again. So, you know, it was really cool to see how Bay Area played. They had a good team. They had good players, good coaches. And, you know, that they definitely gave everybody a run for their money.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was really fun to see and feel a new team in the PBA.
Yeah, I admired how they would run their sets. It's very different from the
good.
Other Filipinos. And there were people thinking that the Chinese nationals weren't as good. And then you saw in the finals that when the other players were nursing injuries, they were stepping up. And Hinebra wasn't ready for them because they weren't in the scouting report. And they scored like 10 to 12 points that would be critical in some of those victories. So yeah, that's really a learning ground for anyone, even you guys as one of the top teams in the league. But how about the compressed schedule now? Like, since we talked about the Governor's Cup and you preparing for it, and you even before, like, playing in a UAP or even high school ball in the States, like, the schedule, is it like this now that even the Gila's preparation is coming up soon? Like, there are even games now on Thursdays. So what are your thoughts on compressed schedule? Because, you know, injuries could happen or you guys could be exhausted. But then it also helps that you could rectify some of the mistakes right away. So what's your whole sentiment about that?
I think it'll be a good thing for us because it'll prepare us for the playoffs if ever we do make it there. Because everybody knows that in the playoffs, when it's a series, the games are really back-to-back. Like, it's a day, and then you get a day break, and then another game. So I think schedules like this make the season move faster. I think it makes the PBA more interesting to watch as well because more people can be tuned in to watching games every day now. So I think it'll be a good thing for the PBA. And in my opinion, I like it better like this because – I would always want to play the game more than practice, obviously. I think it's going to be a good thing for our team and a good thing for the PBA as well to just see a different approach in the schedule and in the league. So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I really enjoy it. I mean, if you have three conferences, you have like three playoffs compared to like an 82-game season in the NBA. There are dog days in the NBA where like in January, not a lot of people watch unless now rivalry week in the NBA. So
that's
fun. The PBA, there's like three playoffs, three finals. So that's really a great adjustment they have. But for the next part, I want to ask more about where you came from or where you grew up, like your childhood and upbringing. Because you didn't grow up here in the country, here in the Philippines, and you came here for college only. So yeah, maybe talk about more about your childhood. And was basketball like your initial like love or the career path you wanted, or you had other dreams or aspirations when you were younger?
I feel like basketball for me was always something that I loved and I grew up with. I started playing basketball when I was maybe about 3 years old. Always because my parents always had like a little toy basketball in my crib as a baby. And on my mom's side, they love the Los Angeles Lakers. Like, everybody's a diehard Laker fan. So I'm always playing basketball, watching basketball. And just because of playing with my titos and playing with my older brother, I've learned a lot just by playing with them. So I definitely grew up around basketball when I was younger. But besides basketball, something else that I would do than play basketball would play a lot of video games. I love video games as a kid. I would always try to stay up late at night to play video games, or in the middle of the night when everyone's sleeping, I would try to sneak to like play video games on like a Nintendo 64 or on my old PlayStation. So if I wasn't playing basketball, I would definitely try to pursue video games and just gaming in general. So I'm glad also that there's like the PBA esports thing that's coming up.
Yeah.
I actually got the opportunity to join in it. Mm-hmm. So I'm really excited for that as well, because not only will I be able to show my skills and like everything in basketball, but I'll be able to show my competitiveness and skills in gaming as well. So hopefully our team will be able to win the championship over there in the esports world.
Yeah. Talking about video games, I mean, you'd know that some parents or some like people with traditional mindset, they don't really, before they would like limit the way people use video games or like,
yeah, for sure,
like devices. But you growing up, I'm not sure if that's how it was in your household, but then what would you say are the way people could control it? Since yeah, it has negative effects if you do it a lot, like anything in life. But you, how would you say that benefits people, and how would you say that people must not be like, how do people not get addicted to it on the other hand also?
Well, for me, I think gaming is more than just something that you just do every day, or something that you just go on and play every day. I feel like it's more of like a lifestyle in a way. It gets you out of a lot of things, like if you're sad, or if it can be used for like an escape as well. Mm-hmm. Just like if I'm feeling sad, or if I don't feel too well one day, I can go play basketball. I can grab basketball, go to the court, go outside and just shoot. It's the same thing with video games. I feel like if you're not feeling too well, you could just hop on your PlayStation, your Xbox, or your PC, and then, you know, you'll just get like so zoned in into the games that, you know, you won't even be thinking about, you know, what's making you feel sad or what's making you feel down that day. And I think that gaming is something that, like you said, people don't really take too seriously. Mm-hmm. But I think now with like the internet and with like all these types of electronics that, you know, the world is just bringing up, I feel like gaming is kind of coming into fruition a little bit, and people are kind of respecting it a little bit more than, you know, than it was in the past.
Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts on like these e-games competitions where they win like millions of pesos or like millions of dollars? Because before, yeah, people don't really care that much about it, but now whenever there's like competition online, whether any video game, like people would watch it. Like there was even a 2K tournament before during the height of the pandemic among NBA players. So yeah, what's your thoughts on that, like the prize money, people now doing it as a job and spending like half a day honing their craft and, you know, continuing to grow in the industry?
I think it's just like anything else you want to pursue in life. Like if you have a dream to become a gamer or somebody who is, yeah, like a professional gamer, then you're going to have to put time into it in order for you to get something back in the future. Especially if you start off young, and you want to, you know, pursue gaming in the gaming world, esports, whatever, in any types of game. It could be Call of Duty, ML, as we see, there's a lot of ML tournaments and stuff, and Dota as well. They always have a lot of big pot prize monies in Dota. But like, yeah, just like any other dream, if you want to succeed in it, you got to sacrifice some time with friends, with, you know, some other things that on the side that you don't really, you know, want to do. But, you know, gaming is a big thing. And I think that people should start, you know, not overlooking it as much as they did before.
Yeah. How about you personally? You said that you stream a lot during the week. And did it start during the pandemic? And how has it been growing, or how have you been progressing in that aspect? Or is that more of a relaxation thing for you, and how do you like balance it also with like, yeah, your family, your work, like PBA? How is it for you?
Yeah, I actually started streaming. I first started streaming on Facebook during the pandemic. I think it was like first couple months into the pandemic. I was like, why not try to pursue this gaming side of my life? Because like I said, without basketball, I would probably be gaming. So I was like, why can't I just, you know, try it just to see? And yeah, I started streaming on Facebook for a couple months. Then I moved over to Twitch as well. And it was going well during the pandemic because everybody's staying at home, you know, watching. So everybody has time to actually go on these streaming platforms and watch. I still stream now as well. As you can see, this is my PC right here. Yeah, but I still stream now. I stream both on Twitch and Facebook now.
Okay.
But yeah, it's going well. I mean, even if I have a couple hundred followers and everything, and you know, people come into the streams whenever they feel comfortable. You know, I try to take it as seriously as I possibly can, but obviously my first priority is basketball because that's my job. And but besides basketball, if I'm not doing anything basketball, I'm trying to game. I'm trying to learn how to edit videos. I'm trying to learn how to edit clips for, you know, for social media and stuff like that. So, you know, I'm trying to just grow myself and improve myself every day just to, you know, build myself up for my future and for my family's future as well.
So talking about gaming and you being in the industry, you also do like vlogs on YouTube. So when did that start? I mean, yeah, you said you edit clips and you're learning how to edit these things. I see that, I searched that you have a channel and document like some of your games. When did that start and how do you plan to continue doing
it? That started, I think, last conference, probably. I think it started last conference. I actually have two channels. I got the Jerrigan and Missy channel.
Yeah.
And then I have the other one, it's called J Money. But that was my first channel that I actually posted like a lot of vlogs and videos for. And I actually got like a good amount of following on there. But then, you know, I decided to move my vlogs over to a different channel, so I just made a new, you know, whole new one, and then that's when I started posting vlogs on there and just about my games and about my life, like what goes on during PBA games and stuff, because people don't really know what happens behind the scenes of PBA games. So I just decided, I thought that was a good idea to start it, and you know, I think it's a good way also to try to get some traction over to whenever I stream or whether that's on Facebook and Twitch. And yeah, I think YouTube is a big thing too. You know, if you hustle hard enough for it and if you put time into it, I'm pretty sure YouTube will always give something back to you. Like once you're monetized, obviously. But
yeah.
YouTube is definitely a thing that people can push for as well. And you know, we've seen a lot of people on YouTube that have just blown up and like it's been taking their lives to another level. So, yeah, YouTube is definitely something that, you know, I'm looking into as well.
How about TikTok? Do you use TikTok? I mean, your brother's pretty famous on that platform.
Yeah, my brother's been doing it. Actually, I think when TikTok first came out, my brother started posting and then he kind of stopped. And then I got into it. I started posting a lot. And then he got back on it. And then I stopped posting. So it was like a kind of a back and forth situation. But now he's doing really well. And I'm happy for him. And I think he loves it. I think it's something that he does on a daily basis every day. And he posts all the time. It doesn't matter what kind of content it is. It could be funny. It could be about his own life. So, you know, I'm happy for him and I hope he continues to succeed on TikTok.
Yeah. Going back now to the basketball talk, it's really great to also learn your other side. That's why I asked you about the other things that you do in life since everyone sees you play on the court already. But yeah, going back to your story, you said that you started playing at a pretty young age. And yeah, I researched that you were part of Village Christian High School. So was that like the time wherein you felt that you could pursue basketball as a profession, or was it more of a mindset of enjoying it as a varsity player in high school? And then was it more of a step-by-step process or a long-term vision that you had?
I knew that I could play basketball when I was actually before I got into high school. When I was playing, it's called like travel ball, AAU basketball in the States, where you go to like a club team, and then that club team travels around the country just to play in like national tournaments so that you can get exposed to like college scouts, to scouts internationally, anywhere. So I knew that I could play basketball at a young age. I kind of slacked a little bit off when I got into high school a little bit. But I think my junior year as well was supposed to be the time that I was supposed to play in one of these club teams to actually get scholarships from like schools out in the States. But then unfortunately I broke my hand, my right hand. And then I had to like take the whole entire summer off. So I wasn't able to, play that summer to show off my skills and everything. But then I saw my brother come out here to the Philippines while he was playing in the D League, and he got drafted. I came out here to come watch him get drafted, and I saw a couple games. He brought me to a UAAP game. I think it was like FEU and LaSalle maybe for my first game that I watched. And something that I noticed right away was the crowd like how loud it was, and even the drums, even though the drums were really loud and sometimes kind of annoying, I really knew that I wanted to come out here to the Philippines and play basketball, because everybody's just so committed and so dedicated to the teams that they support. And, you know, I can see the competitiveness in the players as well whenever they play. So that's what kind of decided for me to come out here and play basketball.
Okay, so before you decided to play basketball here, what was your idea of Philippine basketball, or like the country in general, even just like the beaches or like the food? Did you have any idea from like anyone, your friend, some friend or some relative? Like, did you have any idea on how it was?
Honestly, I barely even heard of stuff back here in the Philippines. I just heard about my mom's province, really. Because she's from Pangasinan. So she just always told us how nice it was in the provinces and how peaceful it is and how they have like nice beaches and everything. So I didn't really hear much about the Philippines until my brother actually came out here and started playing basketball. So now that I'm out here, you know, it's cool. Sometimes it's really hot. That gets kind of annoying too. It's mostly hot most of the time, but you know, the people are cool. The weather is sometimes cool. At least I can keep the AC on in where I stay most of the time. So I'm grateful for where I'm at.
Are you also, do you also have American blood, by the way? Because I read that you're like Filipino Nigerian. So you grew up in the States. So you have American blood as well.
My dad's Nigerian and then my mom is Filipino, but then I grew up in California, that's where my American blood comes from.
Okay. You mentioned that you already were like attracted to playing here in the country because of the passion and like the watching UAAP between LaSalle and FEU. So did you like try out for some of these schools? Like, what was the process for you? Because some of the schools like LaSalle that time, I don't know if they have tryouts, or I don't know if the other schools also have open tryouts. So how did you put your name like in the varsity schools and the NCAA and UAP? Because here in the country, they might not be aware of you since you played somewhere pretty far and they don't have like clips of you yet, or you're unknown to them.
Yeah. I actually came out here and then I just tried out for most of the schools. Like you said, they didn't really know who I was. I was coming from another country and I just finished high school, just graduated high school. So yeah, I just had to try out for this couple of the schools. I think I tried out for, who did I try out for? I tried out for LaSalle first because one of my cousins were going there at the time. And then I tried out for Ateneo, I tried out for NU, and then I ended up trying out at Adamson, where Coach France was the new coach. And yeah, Coach France really liked the way I played, and he believed in me as a player, even though I was kind of like scrawny. You know, I was super skinny at the time and smaller, but yeah, he believed in me. He believed in my potential as a player, and you know, he got me, and then, you know, the rest was history.
Yeah. Playing under Coach France was fantastic for you, and he unlocked like your outside shooting prowess as you're maybe like the best sniper in the UAP during your time there. But that was that your playing style ever since, wherein you're like Clay Thompson, like chucking up a lot of threes and converting it at a high clip and like opening it up for your teammates?
Yeah, for sure. Ever since I was a kid, I was always shooting from far away. Like, I would always try to shoot half-court shots, try to shoot, like, 30-footers, like, 40-footers. Mm. It didn't matter where. I just wanted to be able to know how to score the basketball. And that's something that I kind of learned from just watching NBA players, watching my brother in high school as well, watching colleges. So, you know, I think all my game has kind of just came from, you know, experiences and watching games and also playing, you know, and all of that stuff takes practice. It takes time to, you know, be able to learn those things. So you got to put time into it. Like I said, anything you want to be really good at, you got to put time into it. So, you know, what people see now, how far I shoot and, you know, from wherever I pull the basketball up from, I literally practice all those shots. And, you know, sometimes the things that people don't see behind the scenes comes out to the light. So the more I practice, the more I know it's going to start showing up in games.
Yeah, you mentioned that a lot of the shooting drills are like the practices that you do. Not a lot of people see that. So people would say like how Steph Curry negatively affected the game. That grade three people are like the grade four students. They just want to chuck it up from long distance, even if they can barely hit the rim. So what's your opinion on that and how people misinterpret it? Because you as a shooter, you know that that's not completely correct when the statement that they think he ruined the game because players like you now are more like coaches are more content with you guys shooting from the behind the arc.
Yeah, I mean, it's just something that, you know, you got to find to fit your own style of play in basketball. If you can't shoot from that far, you know, don't really try it in the game unless you actually practice it. You know, but if you're confident enough in shooting from that range or shooting from deep behind the arc, and you know you practice it over and over and over and over again, why not take the chance of trying to do it in the game? You know, just be confident in yourself and be confident in the work that you put in, and like I said, it'll all come into fruition.
So yeah, being one of the top shooters in the league, but then people wouldn't know, like, how was the start there in Adamson? I mean, were you accepted in your initial tryout? I mean, Coach France was still getting an idea of the players since it was his first season in season 79 as well. So how was that like?
I think it was my very first tryout. I tried out there at Adamson and I tried out there at Adamson. I think after one of the practices, he told me that he would be happy enough to give me a scholarship to go to Adamson. So, and at that time, actually, before I tried out at Adamson, I was thinking about going home already because, you know, I tried out at all these schools and I didn't get accepted. So, you know, I was just like, okay, I'll just try this at this school out one more time. And if it's not for me, then it's not for me. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, with God's grace, Coach Franz came in, tried out, and then, you know, he, like I said, he believed in me and he gave me the confidence that I have now in playing in the PBA. So I'm grateful for all of that.
What was your first game? I mean, like, yeah, you weren't familiar at all with the Philippine brand of basketball. Was it like a preseason game? And were you, what like caught your eye right away? Was it the speed? Was it the physicality? And yeah, what was the first thing that came into your mind when you were playing against this schools from this country?
Yeah, I think it's the physicality of Filipino players here. They're all very competitive. It's not just them being physical. It's that they want to win so bad that, you know, they want to be physical enough in order for them to win the game. So that's something that stood out for me when I first came out here to the Philippines. But as you can see now, I have adjusted very well. Obviously, you can just learn more from, you know, going up higher in each level. And now that I'm in the PBA, it's also a different type of physicality. It's mm-hmm. not like college. It's not like any basketball in the States. It's a different type of physicality and competitiveness. And, you know, it's just about time for me to, you know, pick up on some of the things that some of the vets are using in some of the games that they play. And, you know, everything's a process. Everything will come. And, you know, I just got to keep an open mind and keep on learning.
Do you think they, like, played more physical than you because you were a terrific shooter, so they wouldn't give you space to, like, land or even catch the ball, deny the ball on you? Was that, like, a whole thing that you were getting adjusted to as well?
Yeah, I feel like sometimes people knew that, you know, I could shoot from the outside. So the only way that they felt like they could, you know, kind of limit my game would be for me, or they would make me drive to the basket or, you know, put the ball down on the floor and actually dribble. And that's something I'm trying to learn too. I'm trying to learn how to handle the ball better now. I'm trying to learn how to make my body stronger. And, you know, it just all comes into, you know, the process and like the journey of playing basketball and wanting to be the best player that you can be. And if you want to be good at what you do, you're going to have to keep learning every day. You know, every day is different, and you're going to have to keep learning new things as you go along. So if you're not good at one thing, then you're going to have to try to learn to make that your strength, move on to something else. You're going to find another weakness. You got to make that your strength too. So, you know, basketball is just a big open world of experiences and learning about new things, so just got to keep going.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I listened to a podcast recently when Kenny Smith said that Michael Jordan's weaknesses became his strength.
Yeah, when he retired. Yeah, I heard that too.
Yeah, when he retired from the NBA. So yeah, that's right on point on what he said there. But yeah, talking about Adamson, you made a splash right away on your first game. Did you score like 20 plus points in your first game in season 79 of the UAAP? So after that, in that first game, do you think that they weren't sure yet about like how really great you were? Because you know that some of the like Phil Ams or even the foreign student athletes, they don't get to adjust right away at the UAAP level. Like Kai Balungay recently for Ateneo, he had the tough time at like the first round of the eliminations. Yeah. So for you, do you think that was a wake-up call for your opponents? Like, this guy's for real? This guy can propel Adamson to, like, a top four?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I think for me, I like to take on challenges. When people, you know, kind of doubt me or don't think I can do things, I kind of tell myself, you know what? You know, let's prove them wrong. Let's show them that we can actually do things because – you know, the more you let people get into your head and like let them talk about you when you know that you're not that type of person, then that's when, you know, people usually like fall. They usually like back out of certain things. But for me, the more people talk and the more people, you know, think that I can't do things, the more motivation it brings out of me, the more inspiration it brings out of me, and the more I want to show people that, you know, I'm not gonna back down from you. I'm not gonna listen to what you say and let you stop me from getting where I wanna go. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think it was a big wake up call to a lot of people on that first game. And I think throughout my whole entire UAP career, and even sometimes here in the PBA games, whenever I play on the court now, they're like, okay, he knows how to play basketball. We gotta kind of guard him a little bit more now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true, because yeah, playing in your first game, even me as a fan, like a UAP fan, like a huge UAP fan, I wasn't aware as well as on what you could on what you could do on the court. And then one game, okay, this guy's for real already. But yeah, you mentioned that you get motivation from people that talk a lot, whether I guess players or like fans or whoever. So how do you turn it into motivation? Because you know, some players, they get pissed or whatever, like whenever they try to trash talk back, it just doesn't last long, and then they try to do something physical or whatever, they don't show it on the court. So how did you develop that? I mean, that was only your initial year in the Philippines, initial year in the country. So how was that for you?
I think it comes with experience, like I said earlier. You know, the more you want to do things that, you know, benefit yourself, and the more you want to improve yourself, you know, there's going to be more people trying to bring you down. And the longer, you know, those people talk, then the harder that I work. You know what I mean? And the only way I'm confident in what I do is because I work hard. I know I work hard, and I know I practice things that, you know, people might not see in the games. Yes, people see just like my shooting, but, you know, I also practice different things so that when it comes to the game, I'm ready for it. And I know what to do when it comes to certain situations. So, people talking, people doubting you, it should just be used as motivation for you to do better and push yourself to actually accomplish more of your dreams. And I think the more you show up for yourself, the more you prove other people wrong, then, you know, the more confident you can be, the more you can stand up and hold your chest out and show people that, you know, this is me. And even if you talk to me, I'm not gonna listen to you.
Yeah, that's a great mentality that you have. But yeah, talking about that, proving people wrong, you guys made the Final Four in your first season, Coach Francis' first season. I don't think people expected that to happen. And you gave La Salle a run for their money, despite they had like Jaron and Mbala at the same time. Yeah. Really tough to beat them. So how was that like experience going up against La Salle like two seasons in a row? But it also tough like for you mentally, like not getting over the hump going against La Salle, because yeah, they had Mbala twice, and it's really tough to beat a team that has him, because even if you guys had Papi Sarr, I mean, it's really tough to beat someone like Mbala.
I think honestly, some of the things that happened in college, of me just making it to the Final Four, which is kind of like the semis of the PBA, I think it's kind of like coming back into my life a little bit right now, because our team has only been making it to the semis, and we haven't been able to get over that hump of going to the finals. I did make it to the finals my first year.
In the bubble. Yeah.
But you know, I still haven't won a championship. So, you know, I'm thinking that some of the reason that might be could be, you know, I'm not showing up enough for my team, or, you know, I need to be putting more work in so that I could be able to help my team get over that hump. You know what I'm saying? So yeah, it's kind of all like coming around in a full circle right now. And it's another experience that, you know, you got to go through in your journey, and you got to learn how to overcome those small challenges and those big challenges. And this is a challenge for me that I need to help my team get over, hopefully, this conference.
Yeah. Talking about, that getting over the hump and you finally winning a chip. I know you eventually will. It's just a matter of time. But talking about that, and I interviewed two of your previous assistant coaches and Adamson, and Coach Renren and Coach Donald Liado. Like, yeah, did say that. And also, I've heard Coach Fran say on podcast that they wanted you to be more maybe assertive in the bigger games, like being more bakaw, like, you know, like more swapang, like, was that the term? But you shooting more shots because they know you're a shooter and a scorer. So, and you being also more of a vocal leader, I think, because you're more like what? You're more like mild-mannered on the court compared to like others. I'm not sure, but then that's what they were saying. So how did you develop that aspect since you feel that they feel that you could still reach a different level, and they were expecting it in your final year in Adamson, you decided to forgo it because of the pandemic already?
I think me actually being on Magnolia right now is actually kind of helping me become more out of my shell, being more vocal, being more expressive, like with when I'm playing in the games. You know, like when I make a three, holding up my hand and like looking at the person who was guarding me, like stuff like that. And I'm learning those things like players from Calvin, players from Gio, like Mark, Paul sometimes as well. Ian is also has a big, when they play, they're just so like expressive with their emotions. And even when they need to shout out the refs, they will, you know. So, I'm just learning a lot from the older guys on my team. And I'm kind of just getting more comfortable in being out of my shell and really not caring about what other people think or other people say, because, you know, it's that's the way I play is going to be the way I want to play. And the way I want to play is going to be able to help my team. So, Coach France, Coach Aliado, and Coach Renren definitely told me to be more expressive in my final years in the UAAP. Yeah. And unfortunately, I didn't develop it at that time yet. But for me, I think everything is a process. Everything is a journey. So I just got to be, you know, willing to open up to that side of basketball. And I think I'll be okay in the next couple of years. I think people will see a more expressive side of me once the couple of years, maybe once I get into like my third, fourth, fifth year, I think I'll be good.
Yeah, everyone just needs to have that confidence, and especially when you start scoring like 12-15 a game in the league, like you're gonna be more confident and showing that emotion. But playing against LaSalle in those two Final Fours and playing against a Coach Alden Ayo team wherein they press a lot and they're very physical, how annoying was that? And you also had like Kib Montalvo would be under your skin, and there was even a game in the Final Four wherein your brother would say that he's a bully, I remember. And like, he was saying that the refs weren't calling any fouls. So how was that for you playing against them? Like, do you feel that even if it was a negative thing, like by face value or because you guys lost, like, do you think that made you a better player as well, and you learned a lot from going against a talented coach like Coach Allen and like his system, plus someone like Kib?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, Coach Ayo is a great coach. As you can see now, he's coaching one of the PBA teams. And he has some of the players that I played against in the Final Four on the same team. He's shown it. He's proven it that he can coach at any level. And his system in college was no different. You know, they were all very pesky. They were all very assertive with their games. And when Kib was guarding me, you know, it was kind of annoying, but like in the heat of the game, you know, I already knew that he's just doing that because he really wants to win the game. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I couldn't have let, you know, Kib, you know, just let him, what's it called? I couldn't let him get into my head like that much, because if I ever showed weakness towards him, if I ever showed him that the way he was playing, you know, it actually worked, then, you know, he would just continue to do it even more. Mm-hmm. And even if I didn't show any emotion, he'd continue to do it some more. So like, even if I pushed him back, elbowed him or whatever, you know, it still would have all been the same. And even though we lost, you know, it's just another part of the experience and part of the journey that you need to go through in order for you to get to where you want to be. And I know that, you know, sometime in the future, hopefully soon, you know, we'll be able to get to where we want to go.
Yeah, that's for sure. I mean, it's a great experience going up against a university like LaSalle and the system they had, well, before. That was a pretty good system with Coach Alden. But then, yeah, going to the next year, I think it was the peak of your UAP career when you won Mythical 5 in 2018 in season 80-81 against when you were the second seed in the elimination round. So how was that season all in all for you? Because, yeah, you won Mythical 5 and you guys were the second seed against the UP Fighting Runes in the Final Four, wherein, like, yeah, the arena and then Araneta was passed for game two. How was that experience for the whole season?
I think that season was kind of like was more of like a comeback season, kind of, because of how many times we lost to LaSalle in the Final Four. And I feel like that year our team was so hungry to get to the finals again, or to the finals, that, you know, we pushed ourselves so hard in practices, in tune-up games, in tournaments before the UAAP, that we really wanted to win. And besides the fact that once we got to the Final Four and we played UP, you know, kind of things kind of crumbled in ways that you know, we all didn't really expect. Yes, we could have done better as a whole team. Like, we could have won the first game we played against them and gotten to the finals. But, you know, I think it's just another way of God saying that, you know, it's not your time yet. It's not your time to win a championship. It's not your time to go to the finals. And you just got to keep working hard on the side. And eventually, if the work that you put in, you'll be I'll put you in the finals myself. So
yeah,
I think it's all God's grace.
Yeah, with the crowd and all the emotions that you saw from the UP crowd after they won and everything, even from you guys, like, were you really surprised? Because I wasn't there in the arena in like game two, but then I remember the atmosphere and the environment, like. Yeah, do you feel that you guys and even UP, I'm pretty sure they were pretty nervous in the whole game. So was that a game that would really stand out to you?
I think that games like that, I feel like I've played so many games before those games that when I actually played in game two against UP, that I wasn't really nervous. I felt like I was ready. I felt like I was ready to play in games like that. It definitely was crazy to see that many people in there, though, like, especially everybody, like, waving their lights around, and it just felt like it was a movie, like we were in a movie.
Yeah.
And even during the game, even though the crowd was so loud, it was actually kind of hard to hear them because you're so, like, focused into the game.
Locked in.
Yeah, you're so locked in that, like, doesn't matter what UP side is screaming or doesn't matter what Adamson side is screaming, is that, you know, we're all just focused on trying to win the game and trying to, you know, get to the finals. So, you know, it was definitely a fun experience. It was definitely something that I'm going to remember probably for the rest of my life. And even though we lost – and we had twice to beat. You know, it's something I'm going to keep in mind for sure. Whenever I get to a position like that again, I'm going to make sure that, you know, it doesn't slip away from my hands for sure.
Yeah, but that game, one thing more memorable for me was Jerome Lastimosa's shot, because he was a rookie. I didn't even know much about him yet during that time. And I didn't even expect him to take it because you guys were down 3, I believe, and someone passed it to the corner and then he hit the bank 3 to tie it and send it to OT. I thought they were going to go to you, but then maybe you were a decoy on that play because the UP defense was focused on you. So I wanted to ask, like, how was Jerome in his rookie year? Because now he's so special. Like all the teams abroad are recruiting him. He's been declining all these offers, and he's been killing it here in the UAAP, and now he's playing in the strong group games in Dubai. Like, everyone wants him on their team, and he's still so humble, and it's really tough. Like, me as a diehard LaSalle fan, he like eliminated us in the last UAAP season because he played a fantastic game in the do or die match. So how was he like in the start, since people know him now that he's already really great, but you were with him when he was still pretty much not that popular yet, and he was still a rookie?
I mean, I already knew as soon as I played with Jerome that I knew he was special. I knew that he was a really good player. I knew that he had potential to go play wherever he wanted to play if he just put the work in. And he proved that for sure these past couple years he was at Adamson. He worked hard. I saw him, you know, shooting around at the courts at Adamson all the time. Especially when he would post them on his TikToks. So I already knew when he first came in and we were playing that he was a good player, that he loved the game of basketball, that he really wanted to be good at what he did. So, you know, I'm proud of where he's at right now, and I'm proud that he's making the decision to stay one more year just to give, you know, Adamson, you know, what they deserve. And hopefully he can bring them, you know, to the Final Four again. And if he does good enough, maybe he can bring them to the finals as well.
Yeah, that's very possible with someone like Jerome. He's like a Luka type. Like, even if the players aren't as good alongside him compared to, let's say, the other players that would know, like a LeBron Lopez or a Mason Amos. Like, I'm pretty sure Adamson has players that are unknown, but you can see that they're very talented. And I wanted to ask you about it. Like, you guys have like Cedric Manzano or A.P. Manlapas. Like, these players aren't as known to like the casual fans, but then they were fantastic last year. And Manlapas almost single-handedly made you guys beat Ateneo in the final game in this round two. So who are the players that you feel might make a jump, or like who are the players that like complement Jerome and you think they could succeed next season?
I don't really know much of the other players because I only really know the players that I played with. I know Jerome, Vince, AP, Joe M, Sabandel. Who's the other player? Josh. I know Jed Colonia also. When I played with them, they're all young. They're all younger. They're all like in their first or second year. And you know, all of them can play basketball. All of them know how to play the game right. They know how to play, you know, with an edge as well. I even told AP, because AP was like somebody I kind of took under my arm. You know, he's super athletic. Super athletic dude. Like, he can jump out the gym. And I would always tell him that, you know, if he just works hard, if he just, you know, kind of learns the game by playing it and just by watching it a little bit, that he's going to be good. He can play. He can play wherever he wants. And he kind of proved that this last season. And I always tell him not to be shy, because I know that when I was younger too, I was kind of shy. I was like, you know, kind of to myself a little bit, you know, not willing to, you know, kind of get out of my shell. But, you know, he's kind of proving to himself that he can actually play the game, you know, the way he wants to play without being shy about it, without holding anything back. So, you know, I hope he does good, and I hope they all do good this upcoming season.
Yeah. I wanted to ask, I think you talked about it a bit already, like how much you love Coach France and the opportunity he gave you, because you're going to go already home if you didn't make it to Adamson. So I wanted to ask how your relationship developed over the years with him, because you were with him for, I think, 4 seasons.
Yeah.
And that like was 3 Final Four appearances, and you guys were really close in the finals. And Coach France, he's been with a lot of players, but then whenever in his interviews, he always doesn't forget to mention you and how important he was to like his his Adamson tenure. So how, yeah, how do you like, how did your relationship grow and how is it like now?
It's good. You know, there's every now and then, you know, I get to text him and just like ask him how everything's going and stuff. And I've recently like connected with his kids too, in like playing basketball as well. So, you know, our relationship's good. Our relationship's, it's good. It's fine. Sometimes I got the chance to play basketball with his kids at Gatorade Hoops, because that's the gym that he kind of owns. Yeah. So, yeah, everything's fine. I can still talk to him whenever, and he knows as well that he can come up to me and talk to me about any type of thing. So, yeah, we're on good terms.
Yeah, talking about your relationship with him, and he eventually decided to resign and focus on his like political venture as a counselor, congressman, I think. Mm-hmm. And you decided to play in the PBA and not play your final year with Adamson already. So was your decision part of that also, that you decided not to play because you was not going to coach anymore, or was it because of the pandemic also? Like, what was the decision and you not deciding to suit up for the season 84, I believe?
It was during the pandemic when I was kind of like, you know, deciding whether or not I should continue to play basketball here, or, you know, go do something else, or stream game and stuff. But somebody told me one time that you shouldn't give up on basketball if basketball doesn't give up on you yet. Mm-hmm. And I felt like that kind of stuck with me. And, you know, I always realized that, you know, yeah, basketball is still here. I'm still kind of young. I still have a chance to, you know, accomplish some of the dreams that I've set out for myself. And, you know, why let that go now when I still have an opportunity? And the opportunity came up when I found the news about the PBA draft, that they were eliminating all of the games that you needed to play in the D League in order for you to join the draft.
Oh, you haven't played in the D League yet that time. Oh,
so, and before they actually took out that rule, I had only played 13 games. You need 14 in order for you to join the draft. So that was just another sign from God himself telling me, like, okay, you know, you need to continue playing basketball. Like, don't give up on this yet. You need to keep going. You know, you can do things in this sport that, you know, maybe other people haven't seen yet. So, yeah, that was definitely the sign that I got from the universe or from God or whoever, that told me, like, you know, you got to keep going because your time is not over yet.
Yeah, that's for sure. I mean, you had a great opportunity now with Magnolia. So what was your draft night stories? I mean, wasn't that through Zoom only, or the draft?
The draft, I was just at home with my brother and my girlfriend. And yeah, we were just excited for, you know, the future and what the future holds for me. Before the draft came around, I was actually working out with Carl Dehesa. He used to play in the PBA too, but thank God for him, because, you know, he gave me another opportunity of actually working out every day. And he told me that he could help me, you know, improve my game before the PBA actually the PBA draft comes up. And, you know, he worked out with me for about, like, I think it was like a month straight or like 2 months straight. And we were, me and him were just working out, you know, every weekend or every, a lot of the days. Like, I can't even remember. There were so many days that I would work out with him and other PBA aspirants as well. But yeah, everything, it was just, you know, falling into alignment once the doors opened of the PBA. So you know, I just got to keep going and keep working hard. And I know everything is going to be okay.
Yeah, that's great that you had the initiative to play against, play and train against Carl Dehesa and, you know, hone your skills, because others don't have that opportunity. And
yeah,
for sure that you gained a lot of benefits entering the draft, and the team saw that. But you being drafted by Magnolia, did you see that coming at number 10? Because me personally, like, yeah, I like predicting, like, my own. Like, I don't share it with people. It's like, oh, this guy is going to go 5, this guy is going to go 8, whatever. But you, I thought that someone else would take a chance on you because Magnolia had a lot of guards already, or they had a lot of shooters like Paul, Mark, Gio.
Mm-hmm.
So were you kind of surprised that they got you? And what was your initial reaction when you were drafted by Magnolia?
Yeah, I was kind of surprised a little bit. I thought I was gonna be picked at like a later oh, part of the draft. Yeah, I actually thought I was gonna get picked later part of the draft. Especially like looking at all the mock drafts and all of the predictions that people had on, like, you know, the online and all the news stuff.
Yeah,
I kind of thought I was gonna go like late first, or, you know, second round. I don't even know, but I was definitely not expecting them to pick me up. And
yeah,
but I'm glad that they did, and everything's working out right now. I'm glad to be teammates with, you know, some of the best players who ever played PBA basketball. So, you know, it's all a blessing, and I'm all grateful for it.
Mm-hmm. But as a shooter, like, it's also difficult for you, or is it a challenge for you at least? Because shooters, sometimes they need to get their rhythm. It takes like a couple of shots before they get hot or they get warm on the floor. But you get the chance to play, let's say, like 10 to 15 minutes a game. And because there's a lot of guards on your team, and it needs to be spread out among you guys. Was it a struggle for you initially, especially because in Adamson, you'd get like, what, 25 to 30 minutes a game?
Yeah. I feel like initially when you're just coming into professional league, you obviously want to show your talents. You obviously want to show how good of a player you can actually be and play in games. So, you know, yeah, it was a little bit frustrating that, you know, I wasn't playing as much as I thought I should be. But, you know, that's all part of the journey of being a professional athlete. You know, you're not always going to play 30, 40 minutes or 20, 25 minutes. You're not always going to be able to be in the position that you want to be in. But I think with being a professional athlete, you got to learn how to adjust. So, yeah, I had to adjust. I had to learn how to work in my position that I was in. And that all came with hard work as well. You know, waking up early in the morning just to go shoot, or staying late after practice just to stay and shoot and work on my game. Things like that gave me the opportunity to actually showcase some of my skills in some of the games. And, you know, it's just some of the things that you have to do on the side in order for you to, you know, play in some of the games. And, you know, it takes a lot of sacrifice. It takes a lot of time out of your day, but, you know, it's all worth it in the end.
Yeah. But talking about that hard work that you were mentioning, that you've been continuously doing to continue honing your craft, like, what's your shooting routine, or how has it changed ever since, let's say, high school or college, and until now that you're in the pros? Because there are guys like, I don't know, I listen to JJ Redick's podcast weekly.
Yeah.
He always says he has this routine even before, and he got pissed a lot after, like, during the pandemic and even like after the bubble, because there were a lot of protocols that make him follow the routine already that he wanted. But he has a routine on how he does his shooting, or even like before that or after that. Like, for you as a shooter, like, are you also that structured or that organized when it comes to your routine as a shooter?
I think that for me, it's just more of like working on all parts of my game to make me better. It's not just shooting that I work on, you know, when I practice, or it's not just dribbling. It's not just, you know, making moves on the run or whatever. It's kind of like all around type of training. And like I said earlier, so that I could be prepared for whatever the game throws at me when I'm actually in the game and playing. I don't have like a certain routine every day, but I feel like the things that I work on every day, it definitely makes me feel more confident when I do play, and it makes me feel like I can go up against anybody for mm-hmm. sure. So yeah, you know, it's not just one thing you need to work on, like I said, that to make you the type of player that you want to be. If you want to be the best version of yourself, you're going to have to work on different types of things to make you better. So yeah, I don't really have a routine like JJ Redick, but JJ Redick is one of the best shooters in the NBA to ever play. So, you know, if he had a routine, then, you know, it definitely worked out for him because he had a great career.
Yeah, it's great that you mentioned that you need to be more versatile and, yeah, expand your repertoire, especially now, like in this day and age in basketball, like positionless basketball. And if you suck at a certain skill or you're like, below average, so they're gonna expose you some way or somehow. Yeah, they'll see it in the film. But yeah, it's great that you're continuing to become more versatile. That's how you're gonna have a long-lasting career in the PBA. Yeah. But yeah, before you go, I have a couple of questions that I usually ask my guests to before we wrap it up. And yeah, thanks again, Jarek, for joining me on the pod.
No problem.
One question is, you know, that the players in the NBA, they became more vocal with social and political issues when the pandemic was present, and because of the George Floyd incident and all the Donald Trump shenanigans. And also here in the Philippines, people became more vocal in terms of the social and political issues during the pandemic, like whatever, like all the face shields or the mask, or even during the elections, like people had their own opinion and they were more vocal compared to before. And you'd know that Filipinos are more timid and they're more shy when it comes to these things. But you as an athlete or as a sports personality, what's your opinion on, like, yeah, you guys having a platform and amplifying your voice and talking about these issues?
I think as athletes here in the Philippines, you have, you know, like a status, or you have, what's it called? like you have a type of status here in the Philippines from everybody that sees you. So obviously you have to keep up that certain standard for people to actually like look up to you or respect you in a certain way. And if that is, you know, speaking up on things that other people might not be as comfortable with, then, you know, you're gonna have to do it. But for me, I like just recently, I like being more of myself. I just try to be as genuine as possible to as many people as I possibly see. And, you know, I just try to make a lasting impression on people, because you don't know whenever you might see them again, or when you might not see them again. So, you know, I feel like for me, it's just being myself and being more of a kind-hearted person to people that you see. Obviously, I need to work on that on the basketball court.
But,
you know, being off the court, you know, I'm going to try to be the best version I can for myself and for the people around me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great opinion that you said there. And yeah, hopefully people will learn from athletes and other people, because you guys have a following, and there may be some people that are unaware, like unknowledgeable about these things, and they'll learn from you guys. So for the next question, if you had the opportunity to have dinner with five people, dead or alive, who would you invite?
Kobe.
Yeah.
Kobe Bryant. Right now, I'm kind of more like business minded in like my life right now.
Anyone's fine.
Kobe, for sure. Kobe. Yeah. Probably MJ, Michael Jordan. There's a real estate guy who's a billionaire. His name is Grant Cardone.
I've never heard of it.
Fourth guy, I've been reading a lot of his books. I'm on one of his books right now. It's called $100 Million Offer. His name is Alex Hormozi. And then, a fifth person to bring to a dinner. Man, that's a tough question. Probably, who do I watch? Probably Kyrie Irving.
Either Kyrie,
or I'm gonna say a gamer because I like gaming too. So I gotta add one gamer in there. Probably either. This is a lot of people. Nick Merckx, Swag, and Tim the Tab Man. Those three. I have to go to dinner with them and just like pick their brains and just see how they, you know, brought up their whole like influencing and gaming and stuff. So it's more than five people, but
that's all good.
If I can get as much people as I can in a dinner to just talk to them, I'm gonna do it.
Yeah, for sure. That list is excellent. And I don't know that you're really gonna learn a lot from that group that you selected there. But yeah, for the final question I wanna ask you, you know that I invite all my guests through social media or email, and that's how I got them on the pod. And for me personally, I learn from them a lot. Well, hopefully also the audience if they watch the episodes that I put out there. But who would you suggest that I could invite on the pod that would have a great story to tell or would be a fun guest to talk to about sports? It doesn't need to be basketball only, but yeah, basketball would be great. It's my favorite sport.
Man. There's a lot of people that I've actually met in the PBA already that actually have like good stories to hear. That's tough. That's a tough question too. Dang. Hold up. Probably. I feel like a good story you could hear from Scotty Thompson.
I haven't had him on the pod yet.
Because of like, you know, everything that's happened in his like PBA career with basketball and like off the court stuff as well. Yeah. So I think that if you could invite him on your podcast, I think you would learn a lot from him, and I think you would be very interested in his story. I've been following his story before even I got into the PBA, and I just respect that man so much. So, yeah, if you could get him on the podcast, tell me and I'll watch it.
Yeah, hopefully. But then it's kind of tough, of course, because he has a lot of responsibilities now. Like he's also gonna have a child like you, so he's been a family man now. And even before his perpetual health days, I've been a huge fan of him already. And he's like a Tim Duncan, like he has no haters. He can't have haters in the PBA. So Scotty's really a fantastic one. So thank you again, Jerick, for joining me on the pod. It was an insightful conversation, and I learned a lot about your story, more than what I see you playing and shooting all those threes every game. Other side of your life also. And do you have a final message before you go?
Everybody who's watching right now, you guys can go follow my stream. Go follow my YouTube. I stream on Twitch and Facebook every weekday, except the weekends. I have my own YouTube channel. It's my name right here on the screen.
Yeah.
And then I also have another YouTube channel. It's J Money. The E is a 3. So make sure you guys go follow me on all of there, because I'm very active on most of the platforms. So come through, enjoy. We always have a good time. So come through and have fun.
Yeah, thanks again. And before you go, is it okay if we take a picture?
Let's do it.
Okay, I'll take it. 1, 2, 3. Okay, thanks, Jarek, for joining on the pod. And yeah, see you soon at the games when I'm able to
watch you guys. Thank you for having me, man. Thank you so much.
Thank you.